Technorama episode 328 for December 14, 2011, Hot Sauce on a Cold Sore.
Here's a little song I wrote to cheer you up. It's called Let's Go Already.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Yes, we have reservations at the restaurant at the end of the universe. Where's our table?
Over there, in the media corner.
Why, thank you, good man. Here's a tip.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for December 14, 2011. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me is not Craig Stepp. He is unconscious at the moment. I have Thomas Command Line Gideon with me. How are you, Thomas?
I'm good. Seems like I was just here.
Deja vu jade.
Is that the same black cat?
It's the same media corner. But you have been busy, and you're somewhat jet-lagged, I understand.
Yes. I've been traveling again since the last time I was on. Off to Paris. Not for anything quite as exciting as the hackathon that I was talking about last time, but...
Oui, Paris?
Oui, Paris. Gay Paris.
Cool.
City of Lights. Gorgeous. Great trip.
I do want to go sometime. My daughter was there in the spring, and I am envious.
I highly recommend it. I didn't get enough time away from work. I was very busy with meetings during the day. Very productive. A lot of good stuff that we'll be working on in the next couple of months. Leading up to, I hope, and I strongly suspect, we'll be going back in June again for this project to meet with more bureaucrats,
excellent.
Regulators, and whatnot. Yeah. So
I hate that when work sends you on a trip and then impedes on your fun time. So unfair.
I get creative, you know. I get the evenings to myself. They can't have all of the time. So they're great ways to go out and kind of do touristy sort of things. So you have a dinner near something that you want to see. And there's not enough time. And it's too late in the day to go like to a museum or something. Like I really wanted to go to D'Orsay. But I got to see the Arch. I got to see the Tower. I got to stroll along the Champs-Élysées. So I can't complain.
Hey, you can even say it better than me, too.
I have no French whatsoever. This is the amazing thing.
I'd like to go to the Champs de la... never mind. I'll just walk to the Louvre. All right, let's move along. Coming up in this episode of Technorama, we have the mother of Wi-Fi. No, that's not a metaphor for anything. More earwear, if you want something to go with your ear guards, and a little high-tech holiday cheer. All that more coming right up.
He never calls the help desk. He doesn't listen to podcasts. They listen to him. He can recite the original Star Wars trilogy, word for word, reproducing the sound effects with his armpits. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friend.
Excuse me, sir. What do you think of Technorama?
It does a wonderful job getting my bathroom grout clean.
Who was that masked stranger? All right. Before we get started, I want to give a shout out to the chat room. Every week we have a live chat room on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern. We did start a few minutes early because, you know, I don't know why. I don't have a good reason. We just did. So keep tabs on your Twitter feed. We have a live chat room this week. We have Ben Vaughn, C. Mungdahl N, Clam Tim, Claudio M, Gru, Kim Chuck, Mad Marv, and ZML 2008. We're going for the Chowder theme. If you like Chowder the cartoon, I like it. So Thomas liked it, and it came up as a topic just moments before the show, so they jumped on that, which is fun. I'm Kim Chuck. If you don't watch, you won't get it. We also have a birthday calendar. Every week, we shout out to the birthday people that are on the birthday calendar. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, go to chuckchat.com/wiki or click on the wiki link on the Technorama website, and you'll see it there. And this week, we have December 14th is Michael Spence from Brothers Osric's Scriptorium. I hope I said that right. There's a link in the show notes, so I'm assuming that's a podcast or a website or something. I have to confess, I don't know. Jorge Schrawen from Belgium is on the 17th. Happy birthday to him. And Phil Burchill, who will be 0x21 in 2006, which would make him now 0x26 in 2011, on the 20th. There's too many numbers going on there. My head just exploded. I should have a sound effect for that. If it happens to be your birthday and you're not on the calendar, happy birthday to you. And go over to the wiki and put that name on there so we can give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. Because I know there's more of you out there that have birthdays this week that are listening that haven't done that, or you have it coming up and it's not on the calendar. So make sure you get that on there because we're watching. I get alerts when that thing's updated. And when it's not updated, I know you're not doing your job. On this day in history for December 14, 2011, it was on this date in 1782 that the Montgolfier brothers, the Montgolfier brothers' first balloon lifts off on its first test flight.
That same date in 1896, the Glasgow Underground Railway is opened by the Glasgow District Subway Company.
Max Planck presents the theoretical derivation of his black body radiation law today in 1900.
2 years later, the Commercial Pacific Cable Company lays the first Pacific Telegraph cable from Ocean Beach, San Francisco to Honolulu, Hawaii.
December 14, 1903, the Wright brothers make their first attempt to fly with the Wright Flyer at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. I like that. A first attempt.
Thankfully, they were eventually successful. Roald Amundsen's team, comprising himself, Olav Bjaaland, Helmer Hansen, Sverre Hassel, and Oscar Wisting, becomes the first to reach the South Pole today in 1911.
I have a devilish smirk just to hear Craig do that one. Such was not the case. It was also on this date in 1962 that NASA's Mariner 2 becomes the first spacecraft to fly by Venus.
And today, in 1972, Eugene Cernan is the last person to walk on the moon after he and Harrison Schmitt complete the third and final extravehicular activity, EVA, of the Apollo 17 mission. This is the last manned mission to the moon of the 20th century.
And just 5 years ago, American spy satellite USA-193 is launched. Happy birthday goes out of this date to Tycho Brahe, Danish astronomer and alchemist, born on this date in 1546.
Also born today in 1909, American geneticist and Nobel laureate Edward Tatum.
And one of my favorite comedians/musicians, Spike Jones, was born today in 1911.
Sharing the same birthday as German-American aerospace engineer Hans von Ohan.
Soviet physicist and Nobel laureate Nikolai Basov was born on this date in 1922.
Dutch chess grandmaster Jan Timman turned 60 today.
And finally, Canadian astronaut Stephen McLean turns 57. And by the way, today is Monkey Day. I kid you not. This was actually on the list of holidays. It's a day when monkey business is actually encouraged. How Technorama-ish. That's a quote from Hallmark. Monkey Day is actually encouraged. And that's the way it was on this day in history for December 14th, 2011.
Yes, we have no bananas.
Good news, crybabies!
First up in the news, we have a CDC warning that I really didn't need to know about, but when I saw this on the news, I couldn't resist. Normally, we don't want to get too grotesque or anything, but this is a warning from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and I believe they tried to put on and prevention on there, but everybody calls it the CDC. They issued the following alert. Notes from the field. Campylobacter jejuni infections associated with sheep castration. What does this have to do with the CDC, you ask? Well, I'm not going to read through all the doctors and things that are written there. On June 29, 2011, the Wyoming Department of Health is notified of two laboratory-confirmed cases of Campylobacter jejuni enteritis. I'm really working on this, trust me. Among persons working at the local sheep ranch. During June, two men had reported onset of symptoms compatible with Campylobacterias. Both patients had diarrhea, and one had abdominal cramps, fever, nausea, and vomiting. One patient was hospitalized for one day. Both patients recovered without sequelae. Is that a real word?
Yeah, I think it just means that they didn't have a subsequent recurrence of symptoms. Those doctors, they like them fancy words.
I thought it was a database language. Yeah. Sequelae.
Sequel A?
Sequel A? That's a Canadian one. Now, here's the part that has to do with the humans. And this is the part that you shouldn't do. During June, both patients had participated in a multi-day event to castrate and dock tails of 1,600 lambs. Both men reported having used their teeth to castrate some of the lambs. Among the 12 persons who participated in the event, the patients are the only two known to have used their teeth. No, it's just like some things you shouldn't do in this world. That's one of them.
I'm a little unclear on the thought process. I'm sure they had some sort of rationale, you know, like the shears were too far away or.
It's just faster. You pick them up.
Faster.
It's an efficiency thing. I don't know. All right. Now, we've seen Apple products and vintage Apple products on eBay, but here's the product that they never sold that ended up on eBay. This is the dumbest Apple product ever sold. Now, why is it so dumb, you ask? It looks kind of legit. It's got an Apple logo on it. It even looks kind of like an old Mac 2CI, or CX, or whatever that one was, with no floppy drive, but it's not. Apparently, under the Scully regime, they must have thought that they might want to get into the networking arena. So, if you've ever wanted to be the kind of person who has owned every single product ever built by Apple, no matter how impractical or expensive, it's your lucky day. There's an eBay ad with something called a multi-server. It describes it as a never-ship prototype that's simply a 3.3 server metal chassis painted Apple white with Apple-specified connections on the back, and a front plate made by the infamous Frog Design. They're the industrial design company that Apple contracted with a long time. It's shipping at 24 pounds, measures 17 by 16 by 6 inches. It's pretty hard to verify this thing is genuine, and at last report it was going for $1,600, but I don't know why. You can't do anything with it. And we used to actually, the place where I worked had 3.3 servers for a while. So, yeah, I can see the uselessness in this.
Is it actually the server? From the description, it sounded like it was just the chassis. It was just a shell. It was just like a mock-up to see what it would look like with their industrial design.
It's probably not actually. Yeah, no cards inside it.
That's how I interpreted the mostly useless, the most expensive paperweight on eBay.
See, the first time I read through it, I thought there was guts. But then when I just read it again, it's like, well, if there's no guts, that's even worse.
I guess there are Apple fans out there that are completists. They want one of everything. Well, you know, whether it's a cube or this.
Multi-server actually sounds like a viable product that they might have built. They had the name.
Is that like a multi-pass?
It had the rainbow logo, so it must have been a long time ago. When did they go from the rainbow to the white?
Oh, I think that was after Scully left. Was that after Jobs came back, or was it before Jobs came back?
What was that, 97? So, if you want it, I haven't checked the bids lately. Let's see what we're up to. $1,974.98. Oh, it's only open for 22 hours more, so unless you're watching the live stream, it's already sold. We'll have to go back in the show notes and tell you how much it went for next week. Good luck with that.
Hacks and Strange Stories!
First up in the Hacks and Strange Stories, you know, there are some things you're not supposed to do when you're driving, like cell phones, shaving, doing your makeup. Not that I do my makeup while I'm driving. But of the most obvious, I would think that a laptop would be one of them. Now, unless you're like a cop on a stakeout, this makes sense. We have the steering wheel desk where you can put. It doesn't look big enough for a laptop. It looks more like a netbook is about as big as you're going to get. It now has a cup holder. So that's what makes it all the more better. More better. It's not a real word. I guess you could put a book up there, too, as in the subsequent picture. Now, the steering wheel desk is going to make the private eye, like I said, much easier. All that time sitting in your car, watching the outside of your Mark's house. Or it might be more difficult because you have to pay attention, right? Because the private eye is supposed to be watching the Mark, not reading a dictionary as is illustrated here. Would you honestly get one of these?
No, I can't say that I would. And I worry. I imagine the person who made this, I think it's on Etsy, so it's a DIY kind of handcrafted bespoke sort of thing, is thinking more about the people who occasionally have to pull over and do work in the car, maybe a traveling salesman. Do they still have those? I don't know if they still have those, but you know, people who spend a lot of time in their cars, maybe live out of their cars, this would be a useful thing.
I'll live out of your car.
but I just, you know, there's a coffee cup there, and I just keep thinking about, you know, the stupid things that cause warning labels and lawsuits. And all I can think is that someone's going to grab that wheel and turn it, and the laptop's going to spill off and break, and the hot coffee's going to go everywhere, and then there's going to be a lawsuit. So is there a disclaimer? It doesn't say in the article. Maybe if we go to the Etsy site, maybe there's a big disclaimer saying.
You know what
saying.
You could do is link this with the club. Then it won't turn.
Oh, that's actually, that's thinking. That's using
it's
your
the
noggin.
The safety desk. Then they'd have to charge more money than this piece of plywood would cost.
It's a $9.99. The low, low price of $9.99.
For a piece of cut plywood.
What if I have a non-standard size steering wheel? See, this says just standard size steering wheels. What if I'm a trucker?
I've got the stock car 14-inch.
You're out of luck. iPads,
does
tablets.
It work on my school bus?
No. No, there's no warning label. I'm waiting for the lawsuit. That's all I'm saying.
It could happen.
It's going to happen. It's inevitable.
All right. A couple of weeks ago, we told you about the ear guards. The ear guards were those plastic covers that went over your ears so that earwigs and other bugs don't crawl into your ears, because that's a problem everybody faces. Well, up here in the cold north of Wisconsin, we also suffer from cold ears. So the answer to that is the ear hat. They're little hats that go over the tips of your ears, just like a regular hat goes on your head. I'm sorry, I can't do this one with a straight face, because why doesn't the poor fool just pull his hat over his ears?
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to mess his hair any further. And they're little stocking caps, too. They look like you could roll them down. Is it like a little balaclava where it's got like a little hole for your earbuds, your iPhone earbuds to go through? That's me curious.
This is just a little too Mandelbrot for me. The little
so.
Hat next to the big hat.
Where does
Do they
it
come
end?
In Vulcan sizes?
Doesn't say. I think that's an untapped market. They should.
Make pointy ones.
Sell them at sci-fi conventions.
Little elf hats on your ears. What's
Elves,
that?
Elves, Vulcans.
Because I'm Vulcan. My buddy Spock gave them to me. All right, back off. Okay, here's one that just came in late on the Sunday News Wire. Bad idea for how to get out of work. New twist on an old excuse of the day. A man in Pennsylvania didn't just use the old, my mom died, excuse to get out of work. He went the extra mile by having an obituary for his very much alive mother published in a local paper. Randy Bartley, editor of the Brookville's Jeffersonian Democrat, said relatives called the paper to inform him that Scott Bennett's mom had been greatly, the death of his mom had been greatly exaggerated. I'm murdering this read. Bennett, 45, was reportedly attempting to score some paid bereavement time from his place of employment. He was charged with disorderly conduct and will likely be sentenced to lifetime of the most awkward family reunions ever. Can you imagine your friends calling you up and saying, gee, I didn't know your wife had died because one of your employees or something wanted to get out of work? It's like, what? Wait a minute. What? That's just wrong, people.
I don't know. I keep thinking of the, you know, the running gag that you often see in sitcoms with the, you know, the kids doing that where it's like, didn't your grandmother already die? Wasn't it last week? I mean, I guess he deserves a little bit of credit for going that extra mile to kind of document his excuse. But yeah, how much worse does that make it that it's in the paper? I think the write-up here in the Daily What really nails it in terms of he's going to have a long, 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 long time to live this down, because every time, it's not even just anecdotal, every time his mom's going to be able to pull out her copy of the paper and go, you, do what I tell you to do.
You can only use that gag one time, and now your trust is shot for any other anything else you call in.
I got H1N1, I can't come into work.
Liar! You said your mom died last week, what is it this week?
Exactly.
And finally, if you know, I think every kid, at least in my generation, wanted to go into space at one time or another. I still do. Well, now you can, if Virginia gets their way. The great Commonwealth of Virginia has quite a quiet little idea to boost the local economy. Tax breaks for space funerals. A proposed law would put money in your pocket for sending your loved one into the void. The action will center around Virginia's Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, with the hope that the facility will go from launching satellites to the ashes of loved ones next year. And the sooner the better. The savings are going to be huge. The LA Times reports the proposed bill would provide a Virginia income tax deduction up to $2,500 a year for such burials. The total deduction could not exceed $8,000. Ah, crap, honey, we reached our maximum for space funeral tax deductions this year. I'll call the accountant. So you get deductions for having kids, and then when you die, you get deductions for sending them into space.
Is this going to turn Virginia into the retirement destination for aging geeks? I have to know.
Well, there you go. They should put this in Florida. You know, that would make more sense because there's more retirees down there.
The other thing I thought was just trying to imagine the conversation being in the room of, well, let's see. We got satellites. What else can we do? You know, how else can we attract people to our spaceport? What's the killer app here? You know, what could we come up with?
Tax deductions!
And really, this is what they came up with.
So as you're making out your online will in Virginia, it goes something like this. Cremation, burial, blasted into space. Which would you prefer? But it's got to be the ashes. You can't send, like, the whole cadaver up there. That just doesn't work.
I would imagine not, just given the expense. You know, the figures you always hear about how much it costs in rocket fuel to lift a pound that you'd want to, yeah.
I don't think you'd that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, what is it? It's something like $10,000 a pound to send stuff up?
Unless you're the mom of that guy, and then she would guilt you into, no, you got to send me all up there, and you're going to get the most expensive, like a lead-lined coffin. There, that's what you have to do. If you want to make it up to me, that's what you'll do.
Nice. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the Media Corner right after this.
Do you drool over cutting-edge technology? Are you the first in line for the latest sci-fi movie? Do you stay up late at night playing video games? Do you consider being called a geek a badge of honor? Then GeekCred is the show for you. Join me, Steve Rickyberg, as I bring you in-depth, behind-the-scenes interviews to give you the inside scoop on everything geek. From tech to sci-fi to games, you name it, we geek it. GeekCred, are you geek enough? To download and subscribe, visit www.geekcred.net and get your geek on.
Hey, this is Kate Vernon, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
I'm just scrolling back and forth, making sure we didn't miss anything, because, you know, last couple weeks, Craig goes, hey, aren't you going to do Hacks and Strange Stories? Or, hey, you skipped over the news. Make sure we got everything before we really dig into the media corner. And we have. Did you know that actress Hedy Lamarr, the famous actress from the, was it 40s, 50s?
I think that's right.
Good lucker. She's hot. Did you know that she's considered the mother of Wi-Fi? Not specifically Wi-Fi, but she's the one who came up with a lot of technologies around Wi-Fi and cell phone that are in use today. Yes, it's true. She's a very smart person, and she was approached by the National Defense because one of her friends or she was involved with the sinking of a ship full of refugees by a German U-boat in 1940. And she knew far more about armaments than most movie stars, which I think is pretty obvious. Before arriving in Hollywood, she had been married to the Austrian munitions manufacturer Fritz Mondel, who supplied the Axis powers. Dining with Nazi generals, Lamar not only learned about the latest submarines and missiles, but also the problems with them, notably the challenge of guiding a torpedo by radio and shielding the signal from enemy interference. Her insight was that you could protect wireless communication from jamming by varying the frequency at which radio signals were transmitted. Now, can you imagine Angelina Jolie coming up with some technology that is, like, decades ahead of what we're using today? That's incredible. Her ingenious frequency-hopping idea was just a hunch until Lamar met fellow amateur inventor George Antheil at the Hollywood dinner. At a Hollywood dinner, not the Hollywood dinner. Notorious in the music world for avant-garde compositions featuring airplane propellers and synchronized player pianos, must listen to that. Prior to the war, Antheil had galvanized Paris, hey, you were there, and incited riots with his cacophonous ballet mécanique. He had also attempted to invent an open-top pianola with which to teach basic keyboard technique. It flopped, but the background came in handy. To realize Lamar's idea, Antheil proposed coordinating transmitter and receiving by controlling the switching between channels with two identical piano rolls running up the same speed. So that's the idea.
It all goes back to paper tape in some form or another.
Punch cards, dude. I still got them right here.
Exactly.
Everything is within arm's reach in this office. It's frightening. See? You got these little holes. I'm going to put the webcam back on. You're still looking at Hedy Lamarr's picture. Every time I think of Hedy Lamarr, I think of...
Headley.
Blazing Saddles, right?
That's Headley.
It's Headley.
Headley.
Mom, it's Hedy Lamarr.
What are you worried about? She's not even born yet. You can sue her. It's one of my favorite movies.
Next. I sent out a tweet and a Google Plus thing this last week and said... Technorama wants to know your favorite sci-fi/fantasy insult. Nobilis Reed comes up with, "Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerve herder." Who's scruffy-looking? Now, a lot of what I got back were great quotes, but they weren't necessarily insults. Some of these are borderline, so I had to pick and choose. David Robertson was actually very prolific. He came up with three. Would you like to take any of these?
Sure. I like Dark Helmet, so I'll take the first one. "So, Lone Star, now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb."
"You better pray to the god of skinny punks that this wind doesn't pick up, because I'll come over there and jam an oar up your..." From Tommy Boy.
And then okay.
Did you read that as German first?
Dear gas pumper. No, it's a die gas pumper from The Jerk.
Die gas pumper. That's what I read first. Like, how come my mind went to German first?
I don't know.
Die gas pumper.
Die gas pumper. I don't know. That works too. It's been a while since I've seen The Jerk, so I didn't get there right away. I'll be honest.
Johnny B from over at Mostly Trivial says,
"Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed. The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force."
See, but that's an oddly specific insult. How often are you actually going to be able to use that versus some of the other ones that people suggested?
Right.
You know, scruffy-looking nerf herder, that's just, you know, any occasion, you know, any time you could just throw that out there. But
wait, what exactly is a nerf in the Star Wars universe?
Isn't it like a Naga?
A what?
Where Naga hide comes from? Isn't a Nerf where, like, Nerf balls come from?
Oh, okay.
Maybe there's in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago, maybe there was this CDC update and warning about not castrating Nerfs with your teeth.
I thought a Naga hide was where you hide while you're shooting the Nagas. Quick, get into the Naga hide so they won't see us.
That's another way to go. I always, my parents always joked about, you know, putting a classified in the paper for a mating pair of Nagas, you know, so you could produce Nagahine.
Now, I have to admit, Matt Barron came up with one. I have no idea what the source is. He didn't quote it. It just says, to the pain.
That's The Princess Bride. That's Wesley.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking it was a Steven Seagal movie.
No, no. That actually was pretty good because that's like the whole lead-in with in the climactic scene where he's, you know, the prince is, Prince Humperdinck's like, I'm not familiar with that term. And then he just goes on and on about what that is. And it just gets, you know, more charged and emotional. That's a good one. Again, though, I mean, how often would that come up? You're like, all right, we're going to set the rules for flag football. How are we going to do this? To the pain. Excuse me, what?
Yeah, some of these were very specific, and I was trying to think of a context where you could actually use them. Although, coming up, there is another one that is... that Sam had given us, but we'll get through Yorga and Deborah's first. Yorga has only human from The Matrix, which is good because I tend to have a Star Trek slant on that as well, which there's another one. I should have put these a little more closely together, related. Deborah Paulson has resistance is futile, which I think everybody understands. It's more of a threat than an insult, but you know, it could be considered an insult. Then to counter that, Sam Vandervelden had assimilate this, which I have used on occasion.
That's a good one, because isn't that after we almost lose Worf, his space suit is sliced open? And that was another good one of just like, you know, Klingons aren't that easy to kill, dude. And then he comes back.
They're resourceful. And... they'll chop off your arm and use it to tie their suit
exactly,
closed.
Exactly.
I love that movie. Leon Duravage. I am not recalling this line from The Fifth Element, and it's quite long.
It's a Gary Oldman's character, Zorg. That's a great scene with the...
I'm going to have to watch that again.
Yeah, with the shape-shifting aliens that he's using to try to get the stones. And so it's this great quote about he's showing them this this gun that has all these different features, you know, the automatic replay feature and all that. And then he winds up with this quote, I hate warriors, too narrow-minded. I'll tell you what I do like, though, a killer, a dyed-in-the-wool killer, cold-blooded, clean, methodical, and thorough. Now, a real killer, when he picked up the ZF-1, would have immediately asked about the little red button on the bottom of the gun.
Again, very specific context for that one. And Joe Fiore writes, Spock, you wanted to know something? Everybody's human. To which Spock returns, I find that remark insulting. I thought the dog face boy quote was better than that.
I think there's a rich seam to be mined there, though, with the verbal banter between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. I've been rewatching on Netflix because they have all of the classic shows on now. I've been watching them from the very start all the way through. I'm about halfway through season two whenever there's nothing else that more interesting on the streaming or on our DVR, I'll just pick up the next episode of the old show. And really, I think that we could spend quite a bit more time. You know, we could do some research. I think we'd come up with some
good
ones between those three.
And speaking of Spock and Kirk, I was watching Treasure Planet, one of Disney's lesser famed movies. I don't know who put this in the Netflix queue, but it showed up and they put in an homage to Dr. McCoy as he's working on the captain, because Jim Hawkins comes up while they're on the island or on the planet, and he says, Jim says something about it. He says, darn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a space pirate or something. And I was like, oh, sweet. And I was the only one laughing, and even Donna didn't get it. I'm like, oh, you missed it. I know what it was. Why I thought of this insult thing. I was making breakfast the other morning, and we happened to have elderberry jam in the fridge. And what's the only insult that involves elderberries?
Monty Python.
That's
the Holy Grail.
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
You'd be surprised how useful Monty Python is. I was having a conversation with a coworker, actually with a bunch of coworkers the other day, with these very... I will ordinarily think of them as being very staid kind of senior managers. And one was trying to characterize a request he'd put into the NetOps group and trying to very pithily explain that not much progress had been made despite repeated attempts. And so he just very quickly referenced the Lancelot charging towards the wedding party. The fact that they just keep showing the same footage of him over and over again. So you don't know when he's going to get there, because every time you see him, it's this, he's this just running and he's running and then they're making merry and they're, and then he's running. And everybody on the call, to their credit, all deep tech geeks all got it and were all cackling. And these are literally, these are all gray beards, you know, old network engineers. And I was laughing about twice as hard just because knowing who these guys were. And that one of them worked in a Monty Python reference, and everybody instantly got what he was trying to go for with that.
That's good.
Yeah, can't go wrong.
Hey, I got that wraps up the media corner. I've got one What the Chuck, but it's not really a What the Chuck. It's more of an observance. Every time I get on the plane, I tend to think of this. They are now telling you to completely turn off your telephones as you get on these planes. You probably experienced this on your most recent trip. It's not good enough to put it in airplane mode. You have to turn the thing completely off. And some of these devices have a rather long boot up time. So what I want to know from you, the listener, email us, technorama@chuckchat.com, or phone us at, what's the magic number?
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
Do you turn off your phone on the airplane during takeoff and landing, or do you just put it on mute and stick it in your pocket? Now, without any way to enforce this, short of them walking around with an EM scanner, going, hey, I'm picking up Wi-Fi over here. I don't know how they're going to really enforce this. This whole thing with Alec Baldwin getting yelled at kind of tricked me into thinking this, and I went, you know what? I think the same thing every time. And they're getting strict about it. And they're not enforcing it, but they're just getting nastier about the way they announce it. Thomas, honestly, did you turn your phone completely off?
I do. I do. And this is even after seeing the Mythbusters, where they showed that modern avionics are pretty well shielded, and the odds of something happening, some interference happening, are astronomical. But I say, who wants to take the chance? I mean, that was kind of the upshot, where they said, you know, it's very, 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 very unlikely anything could go wrong. But that one time in a million it does, do you want to be the guy who didn't turn his phone off? So no, I turn mine off.
But there's something like 3 million people flying every day. So if it was one in a million, you'd have three planes falling out of the sky on this. So one in a million is a bit low for your odds.
Okay, so one in a trillion. I don't know. But still, I mean, really, I mean, do you want to be the person who didn't turn their phone off?
I think they should focus their energies on other safety precautions.
Well, but it's such a simple thing. But they actually, I've noticed with a lot of my recent travel, they're doing stuff that's, it's a little more intrusive, but it actually makes a little bit more sense. They're actually, and this is something they can enforce because it's something that they can just do walking through the cabin. Is they're requiring people to take their headphones off, take their earbuds out during taxi takeoff and landing.
Now, why is that?
I think it makes sense because if there are any instructions that they need to give that they don't want people distracted, you know, so if there are safety instructions that they need to give out through the PA system, they don't want people to miss them. And it makes a certain amount of sense. And that is something that they can go through and just, they can just observe and see if somebody's still got their headphones on, their earbuds in, and ask them politely to take them out.
I've been putting my earbuds in as just noise cancellation. And I have the other end in my hand, so they can clearly see it's not plugged into anything. But the noise, the ambient noise on a plane, especially during takeoff and landing, is really loud. And my ears are ringing after the flight. So I've been just dampening the noise with earbuds.
You could do that with earplugs too, though. And then you'd still be able to hear speech. Right, I think what they're concerned about is you've got your music cranked on top of that. On top of the dampening, and then...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so if they do have to... I don't think it's the fact that you have something in your ears. I think it's the fact that you're distracted from something, and if there's some crucial instruction that they need you to observe. And it's, again, how often is that going to happen? To your point, we don't read stories every day, but they do. You know, I mean, we had one famously, you know, the landing on the Hudson. It does happen, so... You know, I think it's better safe than sorry.
In that case, your seat cushion can be used as a flotation device in the event of a water landing.
flotation cots will be provided to your infants?
Flotation cots? Where did those come from?
I have no idea. British Airways apparently is the only one doing that.
What does a flotation cot consist of?
I don't know. Traveling internationally, this is just one of these weird little differences in the spiel. You think you get used to the spiel and you tune it out. And, you know, they refer to the overhead storage as lockers because in Britain, a bin is a trash bucket. You know, it's a trash can. So it totally makes sense.
Sure enough.
You don't want to put your luggage in the trash. You want to put it in storage. You want to put it in a locker. So, and yeah, and they talk about flotation cots. I don't know what that is. Sounds relaxing.
I was going to say, put the kid on the waves. Woo, go to sleep, go to sleep. Someone over in the UK could probably tell us. We'd love to hear from you. A couple of quick things in the Geek Library as we go there. We have an infographic, speaking of international things and flight and whatnot. We have an infographic of the different outlets, which I thought was fascinating. It's not really a discussion topic other than it's a cool picture. Different outlet configures and power outlets from around the world. And little flags underneath each one. I have used a handful of these. But, you know, the more I look at the U.S.-Canada one, the uglier it gets. I think if Apple were going to design an electrical outlet, right? Because you got to think that way sometimes. They're white. I don't know. Maybe that's what triggered this thought process. If they were going to design something, it would need, well, they would, of course, make it incompatible with everybody else's, so it wouldn't work in the UK, US, Japan, or anything else. But I thought Japan's was the most industrial design-friendly-looking one, because you get three instead of two, like we got. But it only has two leads, so I'm not sure if it's properly grounded or not. Don't know what the voltage is. What are your thoughts? How would you picture a nice... If ANSI or, well, that's American, but if some international governance thing was going to say, all right, today we're going to pass a global law that all outlets must be the same.
I don't know. That's it would be nice because the adapters are hideous because of all of these differences. It's gotten to the point where, practically speaking, I think you can, unless you're traveling to a few countries, when you're traveling in Europe, you really only need one adapter. But, you know, I went to Radio Shack before I started going to Europe and picked up the adapter that I needed. And it looks like it could fit at least 2/3 of the plugs on here. All of the ones that are round in shape. And it's really ugly as a consequence on the plug end because it's got to kind of fit in there and it's kind of strange. I do like, from a practical perspective, I do like the recessed plugs in Europe. That's especially considering that the plugs are so much larger. You need something that really grabs onto it a little bit better than here. But I think I think I gotta agree with you. I think that the Japanese plugs, so you get a good economy for the same wall plate. It does look like, even though they may not be grounded, it does look like they're polarized to me. It looks like one of the blades is a little bit bigger. So, you know, that's a safety advantage. You know, you got that at least, even if they're not fully grounded.
The other safety advantage I like is the ones in Australia, and I know some of the ones in the UK have this as well, is there's a switch by the outlet, so you can turn them off, which I think is very handy.
Yeah, it makes a great deal of sense.
So, that was just fun. Thought I'd throw that up there. And one last thing before I give you your holiday tip for the year. I came across an article, Wisconsin boy is creating actual working Lego farm equipment. That's right. He's got nothing better to do. No, he works on a farm, and he was inspired at an early age because the repairs on the farm equipment were so expensive. They said, hey, you know what? We got to start doing this ourselves because $80 an hour, which includes travel time for the repairmen for the John Deere or International Harvester or you know, whatever mechanic to come out and fix your combine potato picker, whatchamacallit, whatever it is. You can tell I'm so farm fluent, I ooze. Never mind what's oozing today.
It's mint oil.
Mint oil he works on a mint farm. He's got acres and acres of mint plants for peppermint and whatnot. And he started making these actual working Lego models. And I thought, that's brilliant, man. He didn't make these out of kits. He's actually manufactured and fabricated a lot of these things, which is, and they work. I mean, you could put down a little potato farm and have one of his little toys go and pick it up.
And a cool educational element to this as well. He talked about how it's a lot safer to observe these models. You can get up a lot closer, and because he's really taking the time to understand the mechanisms and kind of study not just the equipment on his farm, which I thought was cool, but he even talks about some models that he built just based on some photos that he saw and managed to, from that, make the fully working mechanism, the conveyor belts and all of the bits of machinery. But you can get right up into it. And the video does a pretty good job, I think, of presenting exactly that point as he's talking about it, that you can really see the intricate motions that he's set up and how these machines actually work. That's pretty cool. So if you're into mechanisms, regardless of the fact that this is, you know, for farming, you would think, yeah, that might not be the most exciting thing, but it's actually very cool. So it's a neat little video.
I got to think this kid's got a future in mechanical engineering or something. You know, he's very bright that way.
Well, he, the article said he rebuilt his first engine at 6. So, yeah, I'd have to agree with you.
Finally, my holiday tip for the day. If you're a Netflix customer, you might want to go check out the Instant Watch queue and put the video fireplace. Yes, that's a real thing they've put out. An hour-long video. It has two themes. There's a video fireplace, just the crackling fireplace, or the Yule log fireplace. Yule log is just music played over that. So I was just kind of bored the other day while I was sitting there working on the couch on the laptop and turned on the video fireplace. It's not a loop. It's an hour-long. There's some logs. They just lit this thing. It's snapping. It's crackling. And as you go through this, the logs are burning their normal burn cycle. And towards the end, it's not done like embers and gone, but it's considerably more burned. They could have made a 2-hour feature film, but I'm sure they'll come out with a director's cut later.
the commentary. We were thinking we could add a log here, but then we realized that it might bother people if they saw a stranger's hands reaching into their fireplace and putting a log in for
them. Then George Lucas will get a hold of it and have copper sulfate. We'll throw it in and they have green flames.
Green CGI flames.
CGI flames. We had to CGI that third log.
Mm-hmm.
So with that bit of tripe on Lucas, we take you to the end of the show. We appreciate you giving us your time and your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call the listener line, 206-222-CHAT. As my sister said earlier, that's 2428. Emails, technorama@chuckchat.com. Go to the website. You'll find all the Twitter, Google Plus, and all the other links, including who we are and what we do. Thomas, want to give you a special thanks for joining us again this week.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure. Always a lot of fun.
Give the friendly listener a place where they can find you and your works.
Sure. You can go to one of two places, depending on what your interests are. If you're into the tech geekery, you can listen to my podcast and read my writings on thecommandline.net. And if you're into beer or home brewing, you can check out the work that me and my good buddy John Taylor Williams do at the livingproofbrewcast.com.
I want to give a special thanks to Mad Mar for providing all the great blog content during the week. If you're not going to the website, check it out at chuckchat.com/technorama. We'd love to see you there. Subscribe to the RSS feed to get the content and the podcast automatically delivered to you every week as we come out with it. If this is the last time you hear this before the holidays, happy holidays to you, regardless of your denomination or religious slant or whatever. It's the holidays. Just have a good Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever holidays you celebrate. Make it a good one. Spend it with family and friends. This show is a proud member, speaking of friends, Friends in Tech. Check them out at friendsintech.com. Also associated with Farpoint Media at farpointmedia.com. A whole bunch of great podcasts over there. Till next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And Thomas, would you do the honors of giving us a binary high five?
101.
Thank you, sir.
I didn't witness anything!